On this month's Over the Fence, Windows 8 fails to boost the PC market. Shocker. Therefore, the PC market is in sharp decline. It's a scandal. Apple's going to make their desktop and tablet OS the same thing, should they? Epic is seeing an epic exodus of employees. Ubisoft excises the creative director of Assassin's Creed. So that's why Assassin's Creed 3 sucks so bad. All that and more on this month's Over the Fence.
Hello and welcome to Over the Fence, a podcast where we discuss gaming, entertainment, and technology. Here with us today are Jeff.
These pretzels are making me thirsty.
Jonathan.
Not thirsty at all.
Anthony.
Hey.
David.
Hello.
Eric.
I have gin, therefore making me both better than you and not thirsty.
And me, Patrick. Our first topic for today's podcast is Windows 8, or more specifically, how it failed to basically do anything for the PC market at all.
Well, I will stress, not sure if that's exactly it. It's not boosting it. They were expecting Windows 7, you know, look at the money we're making. And it's not quite capturing the market like it should have.
That's what happens when you decide to push stupid ideas.
And it's not capturing the tablet market either.
I wonder why.
Are you saying, David, that Windows 8 isn't the alpha and the omega?
Maybe. And, you know, it might be just a tiny bit late. Just a tiny bit.
There's that, too. That's kind of funny. There was Tim made that little infographic, like, how long it took from, like, between Apple innovation and Microsoft copying. Although the tablet thing is kind of funny because Microsoft's tried tablets a number of times.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But my big failing with Windows 8, and I think this is everyone's failing, is the Metro screen. Leveraged as a start screen, or like a start menu, like a full screen start menu, it kind of works. But like leveraged as like the place where you do everything, I don't think it's going to fly. And I think the fault of that is because Steve Ballmer got a hard on, and he's like, Metro is it. He saw it on the phones, or he saw some UI treatment. He's like, that's it. Let's use that. And then it came to the phones, and bolstered by their not taking even a percentage of the market share of smartphones, let's put it on the Xbox and Windows. I don't get the math that they use to get from A to Z on there.
And you know, it's interesting because you would think, like, when I tried Windows 8 for the first time, I was like, oh, okay, you know, they're just sort of having the start screen there as like a, you know, full screen start menu. That's a good idea, I guess. But no, the problem is when, like, you run on two screens, you immediately see the thing. You can only really have one desktop open at a time. The other window's got to be Metro, or at least in my experience, which implies that they just really want you to be in Metro, like, all the time. So,
well, it's
yeah.
kind of fun that Metro can, like, dance around. Like, since I use two monitors,
right.
I can actually open Metro in one screen when I have something going on in the other. That's kind of cool, so it's sort of like the start menu can move around. But the thing I'm missing here, and this is the thing that I knew people would run into, is where's my computer? Where's my documents? Yes, there's an Explorer thing pinned to your desktop, but if you don't see the desktop, you don't know how to get there, and you want to get to my computer or my documents, how do you get there?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that leaves a lot of people in the dust. And so for at least two or three friends of mine, the kind of people who right to the level where I actually do tech support for them without charging them.
Hmm.
I've actually gone on their screen and pinned all the stuff they need to the start screen so they can actually get to all the places they actually want to go on the computer. And that's one way to leverage it, but why isn't that just there?
Because Microsoft thinks search is the end all to that.
I will never be on board with the whole, just drop it all over here and use search. No. There's no real-world analog to that. Could you imagine that? Just throw it in the closet and search whenever you want it. I mean, could you imagine?
That's my life.
So not only did Windows 8 not boost the market, but now the PC market's seeing a sharp decline.
Gee, I wonder why.
Tablets. Phones.
See,
people have gotten smart enough to build their own PCs if they want them.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they were just not buying PCs because why do you need to upgrade when all you do is Facebook and Solitaire and whatever else?
Yeah, like that's the other thing, big thing is that the people that used to buy PCs for, you know, their day-to-day stuff they need to do, can now do that on their phones or on their tablets and stuff. So the desktop, as a way of, you know, being that node for, like, an internet communications device, is no longer viable. It's just too expensive for some people. So, yeah.
See, I've done that, too. I replaced my laptop with a tablet, but I still have a desktop. I mean, but if people only pick the laptop, the tablet might be a suitable stand-in. I mean, it hits, like, you know, I don't know, 5 out of the 10 things they want to do, and so it feels like it's complete enough.
Mm-hmm.
I will never be on board with this whole games on your phone, games on the tablet lifestyle. I know lots of people get on there, and there's a bazillion games, but I'm never going to be on board with that. Mm. My tablet is, like, for web browsing, book reading, Netflix watching, HBO Go, things like that. Content consumption.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the tablet is used for. The phone is kind of like the standing computer when I'm on the go and I don't have access to the full desktop.
Yeah.
But when I really want to go, you know, full bores, the desktop. And I have a friend who's big on, like, you know, console gaming, and he's actually, because of my influence, gone the PC gaming route. Not just PC gaming, desktop gaming. Like, hell yeah, another one.
It's interesting. Like, I gotta agree with what you're saying. Like, I, you know, when I first got a smartphone, was like, oh, I'm gonna install all these games, Tetris and Final Fantasy and all these great games that are available. And now I just, my brain doesn't work like that anymore. Like, all those times where I stopped and was like, I'm gonna play a game because I'm bored, I just don't do that. I
think we all settled down to that.
Almost, yeah.
After a while, you try all, you throw this stuff against the wall, and you just kind of land on, like, I only need, like, 2 or 3 screens on my phone of stuff I use constantly.
Like, I just really want to go on Reddit or, you know, something that I am getting information from rather than
wasting
my time on a game, you know.
My screen, so I can get straight to Reddit anytime I want.
Yeah.
So it's important.
Yeah, as far as that goes, I pretty much just use my phone for wasting time while I'm on the go. Like, if I'm waiting for an appointment or something and I can't access my computer, like, I have my phone there so I can browse the web. Or if I'm really bored, you know, I have 1 or 2 games that I can futz around with for half an hour until whatever is I'm done waiting for.
Yeah.
Yeah, but a lot of times, like, really, you don't even have, like, a whole... Like, if I was going to play Final Fantasy, I want to do, like, a whole half an hour. But if I'm in, like, the doctor's office, I don't know how much time I'm going to be sitting there for, so I can't guarantee... You know what I mean? Like, I'd...
That's why I couldn't, like, enjoy Riven on my iPad, because, like, I'm like, Riven feels like a more protracted game than the iPad would make me comfortable playing. So unless you're desperate to play Riven on a tablet, it's really hard to justify, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's Riven and there's Angry Birds, you know what I mean? Like, it's a different game, really.
Angry, like, Riven.
In fact, seeing something like Draw Something classified as a game almost seems wrong somehow. Because it is a game, technically, but it's not the same thing as, like, you know.
And the games that most of these people who are playing on, like, you know, phones and tablets are just bullshit. I mean, I see the stuff my friends' kids are playing, I see the stuff my coworkers are playing, it's just stupid, free bullshit that I can find out there.
Yeah.
And I've never seen any kind of convergence between them, except I know one who loves Angry Birds.
Well, that's a scary thing, though, is that kind of monetization starting to make its way into a lot of gaming.
Yeah. So, Windows 8 tried to merge the tablet experience with the desktop experience.
Mm-hmm.
It looks like Apple's actually doing a reorg that suggests they're going to unify iOS and OS X, which is weird, because iOS is kind of a minimized offshoot of OS X.
Mm-hmm. It's, I mean, their main guy who was really standing in the way of, like, he was the one, what's his nose?
Forstall?
Yeah, him. He was the one who was really in charge of all the skeuomorphism, which, so people don't know what that means. It means when people try to take, basically, you know how, like, when you open the notepad and it looks like a picture of a notepad rather than, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
goes back to the early days of Macintosh.
Yeah, exactly. So now Johnny Ives is in charge of the design.
And I'm wondering how that's going to go, because I feel like Johnny Ives would be busy enough just making the kick-ass hardware, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm worried about that. I mean, not really worried. I feel like Apple is, like, primed to, like, fall off their pedestal. The problem is nobody is primed to take their place.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Amazon has the OK Fire tablet. I'm not a big fan of it personally, but they've got the content. Mm-hmm. But on the flip side, they don't have a good tablet, and they only have like a couple tablets. They don't have like a player device. They don't have software for the computer that plays the content very well. They have software, but it just sucks ass. Like, there's a lot of holes missing. I think the way to fill in the void as a competitor is Google needs to come up with an iTunes killer for Windows, like they came up with Google Chrome to kill Internet Explorer. But moving back to the whole merging things together, I think the way iOS makes sense to a normal user is most users keep desktop icons on their screen. Like, that's how they operate. They have their folders where they organize stuff. They have desktop icons to start the programs. Mm-hmm. I even see, when I used to do tech support, I saw customers with hundreds upon hundreds of favorites stored in different folders on their desktop. That they just lived and breathed off their desktop. Mm-hmm. And just like my father, they open one window, do whatever they're going to do, close that window, and open a new one. Doesn't matter, they could leave both open. No. I have to have only one open at a time. They can only handle one at a time. Mm-hmm. So I get the logic of iOS being just essentially a screen of program icons.
You know what's really funny, though? I was on a road trip with my parents today because it was Mother's Day, and my father was literally saying the same thing about the way my mother uses the computer, that she always opens up Google Chrome, looks at it, you know, because she's... And she opens up a Google Chrome, looks at a page, closes it, and then opens it up again to do something else rather than opening up, like, a new tab or anything. The whole idea of multitasking just doesn't occur to...
Yeah, I've tried to get my father to, like, embrace tabbed browsing. No. He absolutely won't do it. And I've started, like, taking a firm stance. Like, you're going to learn this. Like, he brings up his browser, and he starts typing in the Yahoo search, searches for it, and then tries to find the first link. And he's like, oh, I can't find it. Like, you don't have to find it. I told you the address. You put it in the address bar. It goes straight to it. You know, that kind of thing.
There was a funny joke on – I hate to bump, but – There's a funny joke on Parks and Rec where one of the older guys, his way of searching was to go to Alta Vista and type in, please take me to google.com.
Whoa. Wow.
In order to start the search.
Alta Vista.
Moving away from the operating system and the infrastructure, let's talk about gaming. A little bit of bad news. Epic Games, very famous for being the company that produced Unreal Tournament and Gears of War. Also, I believe they had a hand in the original Painkiller. They are kind of seeing an exodus of employees. First, Cliffy B, like the guy who kind of ran the show, and they just keep losing more people. Now, this is kind of important because the Unreal Engine is under just almost every game of note in this generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, Bioshock, Borderlands. I can't think of them all off the top of my head without having Steam open. Mass Effect. People making variations of the engine saying, well, this isn't Unreal Engine 3, this is our variation. Like, it's still Unreal Engine 3. They just started from there.
Engine 3, this is just a tribute?
Well, sort of, but my whole thing is, if you've seen the pressers for Unreal Engine 4, it doesn't look all that, like, I mean, it looks good, of course, but it's not like, when we saw all the stuff for Unreal Engine 3, I forget, I think it was the same E3 that we saw the stuff about Half-Life 2. Unreal Engine 3 was amazing. Like, we had never seen its like before, the things they could do with it.
And it lived up to it, considering how long people have used it.
Yeah. So, Unreal Engine 4 is not that revolution. It has some features, and they tote those features as though they are the second coming, but they are not. Mm. It's not the fidelity difference that we saw, which is probably going to be the issue with this console generation. Is not going to be the leap forward everyone wants it to be, mm-hmm. because technology just can't go much further. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
just to me, this kind of scares me a little bit because, you know, something that was so core to this generation of games and media suddenly is kind of thrown into danger. Who's going to step up and replace them?
And this is when Valve swoops down out of the heavens and the Gabe End descends with angels crying as he announces Source 2.
I have actually thought exactly that.
Yeah. And it's like the hyperbole and the joking about the Gabe End aside.
Okay.
Honestly, I can really see. We know they're working on something big. They have been for a while. So basically, it's Source 2. Everybody knows it.
And Source 2 will work seamlessly on Windows, Linux, PlayStation 4, and Xbox, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, they must be working on something because I've heard nothing from them in forever.
Mm-hmm.
Half-Life 3.
Maybe.
Source 2.
They can produce a Source 2, but if they ever tried to make a Source 3, it's not happening.
Nope.
But the thing, if the thing is, if they were going to do Half-Life 3, they were going to do Half-Life 3, it would have to be on a new engine. It would have to have some manner of revolution to it. That's the whole point of the Half-Life series. Half-Life 2.
You missed Anthony's joke about how they can't count to 3.
Oh, well, yeah, but.
There is no 3.
There is no 3 when it comes to Valve.
I'm because, you know, after Source 2, if they're going to do Source Engine 2, Episode 1.
Oh, my God.
I still, this is unrelated, but I still think that the best way for them to go about it would to be, before even announcing Half-Life 3, to just do like a little Episode 3 thing that leads into something and then have this big announcement, new engine, because like, as I was saying, that's been the whole point of the Half-Life series. The Half-Life 2 is on this brand new engine. It was showing off. I know I'm rambling, but I just, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
Speaking of people leaving, the Ubisoft's former creative director of Assassin's Creed, who left in 2010, then joined THQ Montreal, which was later acquired by Ubisoft, has been fired.
Yes.
Which suggests to us that maybe he was, when he left Ubisoft in the first place, they were kind of waiting for him to leave. But that also explains how Assassin's Creed ran off the rails so hard with Assassin's Creed 3, because he wasn't there anymore.
It's so, you know,
and honestly, it's like, I've tried playing Revelations. I cannot get through it because I get so friggin' bored every time I boot it. And you can tell that it was starting to stagnate, so I understand them wanting to change it. But at the same time, I don't know who they put in there to run that franchise. But,
they dropped so much of what made Brotherhood enjoyable.
Brotherhood was easily my favorite of the Creed games.
Yeah, in Revelations, like, I'm like, where's all the side missions? I feel like they want to keep me on the story. Mm-hmm. But there's all this side stuff you want to do, and you kind of like, when you're doing side stuff, you like to have other side stuff that happens to be over in the side stuff area. You know, like, it feels like the areas are made richer by the presence, which is explains to me he probably left at that point, which is why it's so missing pieces.
Well, I think the interesting thing about Assassin's Creed 3 in general is I remember, and I think this was from him, his mouth, was that their whole plan with Assassin's Creed 3, Assassin's Creed 3, I'm sorry, was it after all this setup?
I think I like 3 better.
Yeah. Was it after all this setup we were finally going to get like a modern sci-fi thriller? It was going to be about what's his face? You know, the guy.
I thought for sure.
Yeah, as opposed to doing another flashback game. And then for the 3, they're like, nope, we're just going to do it anyway.
Yeah, so. I think that was his direction too.
Yeah,
we
exactly.
were going to go all modern in his. And I think that without him there, they couldn't make it fly.
Right, yeah.
So anyway, there's a little bit of drama around that. And, you know, like he wasn't like informed as being let go until they came in front of him and said, you're leaving, here's your piece of paper, and I'll walk out the building. He couldn't gather his belongings, he couldn't talk to his coworkers, gather his, you know, he couldn't do anything that he needed to do. And just like, that's kind of harsh.
Yeah.
So there's probably some more drama there we don't know about.
Especially when you directed the franchise for that long, you know? Jeez.
But I still feel like, you know, Assassin's Creed ran off the rails hard, and this is why. So.
No, it would definitely explain, you know, it's still amazing how much of a disappointment the third game was. I so many people that I didn't even associate with gaming who really wanted to play the third game, and just everybody was let down. It was just really shocking to see half.
The only thing I can say good about the third game, it was graphically pretty good.
Oh, yeah. No, it looks
people tend
nice.
To be impressed if they saw it. But otherwise, there's no other praise I have for it. They said, oh, the combat's shaken up and this and that. I was like, yeah, you've completely changed it to the point that I can't do it anymore. I mean, you need to spend more time training me to do it like they did in like the first Assassin's Creed, because they've completely revamped it. It was too hard to use. And they took it several steps back. Like, they started from Assassin's Creed 1 and went to 3.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of explains why the big holes there. Like, without him there, they didn't know how to transition, so they just kind of took older assets, which kind of explains how sucky it was.
Yeah.
So Assassin's Creed is kind of a violent game. Get your nice
transition for this, though.
Oh, okay.
I was going to say, speaking of firings, that's why I said earlier, because I thought we were going to this point. The whole joke is, like, firing gun violent, but yours might be better.
Right. So Assassin's Creed allows you to get your stab on, and that's violent. We lower violence in our video games. But some people are saying BioShock Infinite is over-the-top violent. Is there a such thing in video games?
Now, I've never played this game, so I can't comment. What I can say is that there's definitely a difference between violence that sort of disgusts you and, like, very visceral violence that sort of just excites. Now, since I haven't played, I can't really comment on it, but maybe somebody here
Eric, you've played it, right?
Yeah, I finished it in the first week
okay.
or so.
You played the first BioShock, yeah?
I played all the BioShocks, completed them.
Okay, so being that you played BioShock 1, mm-hmm. and I assume BioShock 2, yes?
Yes, I finished that one too.
Were you shocked by the violence in BioShock Infinite?
Knowing how the franchise is traditionally, not really. It was about par for the course. And in fact, in a lot of ways, I thought it was a little bit less violent because it didn't have the over-the-top horror elements of BioShock 1. So
wouldn't you say that maybe the problem is the comparison to like the colorful, quiet, serene-looking
world?
That's
what I was going to say.
And that's definitely where they're going here. And I would argue the counterpoint that that's the point. BioShock and BioShock 2, the point of the story is that we stepped into a city that had already completely gone down the hole. The terrible things had happened, and we're trying to put it back together. And hence why within the first hour of the original BioShock, you see three people crucified on walls. Downright disturbing.
Let me interrupt you right there before you get into spoiler territory.
Yeah.
BioShock Infinite, even at its worst, still looks like a colorful, bright world.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. and that's the thing. The contrast is probably the
issue. Is it maybe just the fact that you have this like really idyllic world with all this violence on top?
BioShock Disneyland.
The first two were very grim.
Exactly.
The
rides are great,
and you know you have all the happy
just not enough of them.
Music, but it's done ironically. You know, it's still very mm-hmm. grim setting wise. You know,
mm-hmm. I could not get enough of those rails.
Yep. Oh, those were great.
Oh, come on, guys.
The other point that I'm hearing, and I know I'm kind of jumping between two sides, but it keeps the conversation going. Is that the violent content is distracting people who want to play it for the story. And I won't get into the story, but like I said, let's just say the third act is a doozy. And people who want to play the game to get into the third act to have the talking points are turned off by the beginning of the game, which when it goes from being idyllic, happy, happy land to, okay, now I'm trying to survive, is very visceral, let's say. One scene in particular, and those of you who have played the game know exactly which one I'm talking about.
Yeah. So basically what you're saying is it can be jarring.
I know that's the point.
It's not like gun down civilians in an airport jarring.
No, which, yeah.
So I don't get the complaint. It's like somebody like woke up and never knew. I mean, it's BioShock Infinite, so I guess because it doesn't say BioShock 2 or BioShock 3, that they don't get that this is a series.
Yeah.
So they have taken the game in and of itself, and maybe that's why they don't understand what to expect.
Yeah, but when Call of Duty did it, there was warnings all over the game. In fact, they had to.
They
click,
had
okay.
to though. They were really pushing some buttons when they did that. You know, so they couldn't just like push it forward. They had to have gotten some warning from somebody legal or somebody.
Yeah.
They had to have a disclaimer.
That one, and that game is hyper realistic compared to BioShock,
and
where everyone looks kind of cartoony to begin with. So it's like,
and I don't think that added being a little retrospective with Modern Warfare 2. I don't think that really added anything to the game. I think in Call of Duty 4, the scene that they had in there that I would call the analog to Modern Warfare 2's airport killing mm-hmm. really added something to the experience. In the same way, I think that the way the violence, in the contrast of the violence versus the idyllic situation, adds something to the BioShock Infinite experience. So, the only thing I really missed a lot in the game was I felt like I never had enough ammo.
Yeah,
there's never enough bullets for the gun I like.
That's true. I had to switch my guns out a lot more than...
I'm like, no, I want to keep using it.
They did that one on purpose.
Yeah, I know, but it's just... And they did something that broke when I finally said, fuck it, I'm getting a trainer. And they did something with one of the first patches that broke it, like you can't use cheats. It detects it and crashes the game. Like, fuck you. What do you care? I'm enjoying the game. Why do you care how I play it?
It's their experience. So, they don't want you messing with it.
So, talking about messing with assets, Gearbox may have purportedly ripped off the art style used in Borderlands.
If you had told me this news 6 months ago, I would have been stunned and be blaming, saying that somebody was trying to get some cash out of them.
Patent trolling, yeah.
Seeing how Gearbox had how pretty much all of their other releases since the original Borderlands have been complete flops, I'm starting to believe it a little bit more, which makes me really sad.
That is exactly
it's
the
really
tactic.
Disheartening, but yeah.
It's like Colonial Marines was terrible. Duke Nukem was terrible. And they may have just gotten lucky, or they may have just put like 90% of their assets towards Borderlands 2 and ignored the other two projects until they could throw something together. I don't know what's going on.
I want to be fair here. You know, there's more to Borderlands than just the art direction. I love the art direction, but there's definitely more to it than just that.
Well, the thing,
but
the
we
thing
can't
about
ignore
it,
the fact that it is kind of the only good thing they put out.
If you if you watch the beginning of that video that we've linked, and you look at the Borderlands beginning, there's so many common threads there, but that's just the beginning. But maybe that's you know, that's the kind of thing, like, I remember when I landed in Firestone in the beginning of Borderlands, I was like, I'm cool with this. Like, I was immediately happy to just, like, I haven't even played the whole game, and I'm, like, happy to just keep going.
Right.
And you start, you have, like, Firestone becomes your little hub. I'm like, okay, if this is the way it's going to proceed, like, I do stuff around here from this hub, and then I'll probably get to another hub, and that'll help me how the game moves along. And then, like, it just, like, it instantly grounded me, and I figured out how to enjoy it.
Right, yeah.
I never really quite enjoyed Borderlands 2 on that level.
Nope.
Borderlands 2 was made for me by the social element of playing together with somebody. But
for me, I played most of Borderlands 1 solo, and I played most of Borderlands 2 with people. I think I enjoyed Borderlands 2 partially because of that, but at the same time, it's just the writing was so much better. Borderlands 1 tried to be the satire that Borderlands 2 would try to be, and it just kind of failed. It took a lot of time for them to figure out how to actually do the writing and balance satire
with
a serious story.
It's gameplay where I feel like they flubbed in Borderlands 2.
Really?
Like,
the
variations on the guns really ruined it. Like
really?
I'm fighting a revolver and this bullet takes 3 seconds to get to the enemy. Oh, great, thanks.
See that?
You know,
I was talking about it earlier. That's the fundamental thing I messed up. They had a really good formula when it came to the gameplay in the original, and then they decided they were just going to tweak it a little bit without understanding what made it work in the first game, and they ended up tweaking out a lot of the things that made it fun.
Yeah.
At the same time, I like it because it's a lot more streamlined. Like, oh, that's a Jacob's gun that dropped. I know, at least on a fundamental level, kind of how it's going to act, and for the classes that I play, I need to have specific kinds of guns for them to be useful. So it's like, I can see, oh, a Dahl dropped, I'm okay with that. A Jacobs dropped, I can't really use that. A Hyperion dropped, F yeah, give me that gun. So,
but then you've got your Hyperion, but you don't get much variation in your Hyperion anymore. So I don't get much excitement about getting another Hyperion, because I already have one that I grabbed that's at this level.
But that's always been a problem with Borderlands 1 even had that, where I'm just like, well, I have this gun that's really good. Am I getting... Nope.
Yeah, it's funny how like a gun will carry you for so many levels.
Do you ever get that gun that insults you if you miss shots?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
At the same time, I understand Borderlands 2, you can't get like the rocket shotgun like you did in the first game, but I don't know. So many of those really specialty guns, the wave shotgun, the rocket shotgun, that sort of thing, they were neat novelties for the 20 seconds that you played with them, and then you put them away and you never use them again. And
you got out the real gun that actually gets the work done.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
most of my friends who played the game and liked how random things got, the more random the gun, it's fun to play with and show off, but then you immediately went back and you switched back to either your rocket launcher or your shotgun or your machine gun that shoots rockets, the normal stuff.
Maybe the place to go would have been to allow customization of the weapons. Like, I like this sight, but I like this gun's fire rate.
I see that coming in Borderlands 3. I see that you being able to piece together your own guns and
Not so sure from what direction I'm seeing from Gearbox.
I'm thinking they're
trying to take it more along the lines, I wouldn't want to say an MMO, but that kind of gameplay.
It's definitely Diablo inspired. It's Diablo, the first-person shooter, only funny.
So, well, the first was more like the original Diablo. This is more like Diablo 3.
Are we in agreement that Borderlands 1 was the better of the two?
I
don't agree. Yeah, I don't know. They're kind of equal to me for different reasons.
Split down the middle.
So, so maybe there's a certain ambivalence that comes with, you know, later in this generation. Like when I played Uncharted 3, like it didn't come anywhere near being as good as Uncharted 2. And maybe just like I'm just like nothing is going to hit at that level where I'm just that impressed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's because, you know, I'm starting to reach a financial point right now where like video games aren't like the only entertainment I can afford. So maybe it's something like that. But either way, Borderlands 2 was gorgeous. It ran smooth as butter. It was perfect in every graphical way. There were so many things that, like, I remember when we first arrived at the main hub town that you spend most of your time at, I kept saying, like, I cannot get over how good this looks. Because you go back to the old game and you have, like, the blurry textures, you know, the straight from console stuff. And, you know, they definitely gave some PC love to the second one.
Oh, yeah.
They said all of them are the same, but I don't enjoy it as much.
You just have to compare the menus in the two games to see that. The settings.
Yeah.
And if you have trouble, like if you get past your second playthrough and you suddenly find that you can't kill the enemies, try loading your character and make sure that you're on the right settings, because I found out that I was on the super hard mode where, like, you can't really do things by yourself, which it automatically puts you on. Which you have to be careful not to land on your first playthrough, because everything's level 30 and nothing drops that's worth anything to you.
I've tried playing in Ultimate Vault Hunter mode this past weekend, because we had a Borderlands weekend, and just soloing, I got through the very first boss you fight, which is Boom Boom, and it got me half the way through level 50. So it's like, I can understand they are dishing out ridiculous amounts of experience, but at the same time, when I'm having trouble killing just two bandits as a Gunzerker, there's something wrong here.
Oh, yeah, there's been a lot of complaining on the forums about the Ultimate Vault Hunter mode.
The balance is kind of weird. I mean, I know that the game has a thing built in. You know, like, you know, somebody enters, the creatures grow stronger. Somebody leaves, the creatures grow weaker. I'm like, so why does that not happen? Like, as an example, I shot something for a critical, 127,000 damage. This thing is my level, and I have 66,000 health.
Mm-hmm.
So 127,000 health is about 2 to 5% of its health bar. Wait a minute, you're my level. Are you that much more? So I didn't get the balance. I didn't understand that.
Hmm.
So maybe it's going with, you know, World of Warcraft boss battle levels.
Well, when you start talking about raid bosses, you kind of get the direction they're going.
So, talking about outlandish, Far Cry 3 has come out with an expansion, which was announced on April 1st. That looked like, at best, a joke that was never going to be real. The Blood Dragon DLC. The trailer looked like a action sci-fi cartoon from the 80s. It looked cheesy as all get out, and turns out it's actually fucking real. They did release it.
Not only that, it's hilarious.
Yeah, so I don't know where they're coming from with this one. I've never seen such a Ubisoft ever do such an unrelated DLC to something. Well, then again, I guess they did that The Madness of King George, where George Washington goes crazy in Assassin's Creed 3, where I guess he's like, wants to become a dictator or whatever, which is the, you know, alternate universe type of storyline. So I guess they were kind of starting to go in that direction. Still leaves me a little in the cold. Like, I would love some more Far Cry 3, you know, maybe another island, maybe another location, but this, I don't know. I'm not saying it's bad, it's just not my cup of tea.
As a kid who grew up watching 80s cartoons, and I know I was on, I was an early 90s kid, but at the same time, I grew up watching older stuff, 80s movies when I got into my teens. This just hits all the buttons. It's not meant to be taken seriously, and it is meant to basically use and abuse every single 80s cliche and stereotype that it possibly could. I mean, the main voice actor for the main character, who's like named Captain Rex Dart or something like that.
Oh God, it's wonderful.
The voice actor is the guy who plays Kyle Reese in the original Terminator movie.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so you've got that going, and all the scientists are being helped in the community. But you've got this Tron overlay where everything is outlined in neon red and reds and greens.
Wow.
You actually have tracking, like VCR tracking screens when you're loading up the game so that you can get the lines
off
the screen.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
There's a button that does nothing more than flip off enemies with your robot middle finger. Your reload animations are the Terminator chuck the grenade up in the air, and then it lands perfectly in your shotgun. It is so amazing, over the top, that I'm really glad this is only a DLC and not a full game. Because if this was a full 10, 15, 20 hour game, it would get really sickening really fast because it's that much over the top. But as a 6 to 8 hour DLC, it's perfect.
Maybe that's the whole idea, though. Somebody was like, I really want to make this game that's like a total pastiche of the 80s. Pastiche of the 80s.
Yeah, pastiche.
And somebody was like, you can't release that.
Mm-hmm.
You know that, right? And they're like, well, I guess we could make a DLC to another game. Wait a minute. Why don't we, since we're doing this engine anyway, maybe. I don't know, you know.
And here's another interesting angle on this standalone DLC thing. The nice thing about it is you don't need to own any copies of Far Cry to play it. You can just buy Blood Dragon, download it, and boom, you're playing. And we've seen this before with Red Dead Redemption Zombie Nightmare, and it's kind of the exact same concept where you have a really solid game and game engine, and then using the same game assets with a few tweaks, you have this ridiculous off-the-wall thing that you could never throw into the main game, but it works, and it works very well, and you sell it as a standalone. And if DLC starts going this direction and letting you kind of pick and choose, like, yeah, the game looked not good, but this looks kind of funny. Like, for example, if you wanted Borderlands, but you only want the upcoming Tiny Tina Plays D&D expansion that's going to be coming out in June.
Is that actually happening? Oh,
that
God.
Is actually happening. just was announced last week, 2 weeks ago. But
wow.
I like this idea of standalone expansions. It's the same game. It can import stuff from the other game if you're going to tie it in, or if it's going to, you know, kind of like how the Telltale games can import from each other based on what you've completed in minigames, that sort of thing. And or you can just buy it and have your fun. Say, that was a good 10, 15 bucks and a good evening or two of my night. Put it away and you're good. It's something where instead of DLC being this ridiculous chokehold like EA is pushing down, this gives us now some options. Now, we're going to offer you the DLC, but it's not going to be a required thing, and it's not going to be something that you absolutely have to pay $60 up front, plus another $15 just to play the little bit of content that you find interesting.
Now, didn't Grand Theft Auto 4 do that with all its DLC, if I'm remembering correctly?
I believe so. I know they released it separately. I think I don't know if they did that initially at first, though.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, because that was more, I mean, Grand Theft Auto has always had a stronger, like, or at least a very strong console market.
Mm-hmm.
And so in order to really, back in the time when Grand Theft Auto 4 came out anyway, doing, like, DLC online was not a thing. You know, so, yeah, so to release a DLC, well, they wouldn't have called it a DLC, but to release an expansion that was standalone made probably more sense for them at the time, whereas now with whatever console's happening next, it's probably going to be more DLC-centric, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
So, as an extemporaneous point here, since we're talking about DLC, I played the Dishonored DLC, and it's very good.
Yeah.
It actually adds some interesting moral decisions to your gameplay.
Oh, wow.
And some things, I mean, even if you can guess in your head what I'm talking about by saying moral, I'm willing to bet that what I'm thinking about and what you are thinking about are not the same thing.
Really? Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So it's harder than the core game. There's some weirdness, like if you're used to the blink animation when you transfer from one place to another.
Mm-hmm.
It's got this, like, thunderous, like, this protagonist you play as, his is like the world is rocked for a second. Like, after he finishes, like, the world kind of, like, shakes a little bit as it comes back into focus.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as graceful as the main protagonist from the game.
Mm-hmm.
It's well worth the money, in my opinion.
Yeah.
One of the few times when I've said that about DLC. I played through it 3 times before I finally felt like I had gotten all the options you could take. There is a, you know, good and a bad ending. I don't know if there's like a middle ending, like in the core game, there's like 3 different endings. So
I've heard a lot of good things about that DLC. I've also just heard a lot of good things about Dishonored. I tried playing it over the winter, but I just came to the conclusion that it just wasn't going to work on my computer, at least not the way that I wanted it to. So I sort of just gave up. so waiting on a new PC.
It's the kind of game, if you like, you know, Deus Ex, Human Revolution, that's a good one for you.
Well, same thing with Deus Ex. I actually did the same. Tried playing it, and I was like, nope, this is not the performance I need for this. And then,
oh, my God. Your computer sucks.
I know. But, you know, once I have money.
So, random topic. I can't think of a any kind of a transition here. Mega Upload has decided they're going to try to combat the U.S. government corruption. And, of course, we have to be specific because, you know, mm-hmm. what corruption? There's all kinds of different corruption. The corruption from Hollywood. And so their whole thing is that, you know, Hollywood pulled the trigger and the attack dogs were let loose on them. And how appropriate that is or isn't is kind of debatable. I only use Mega Upload here and there, and it was usually just somebody posted a file so I could get it, and it was easy peasy. I was sad because I couldn't get the soundtrack to Just Cause 2 because it was on Mega Upload. It was legitimately put there by Eidos, but I couldn't get it because they were taken down before I found out about it. They also had, I think briefly, the soundtrack for Bioshock was on Mega Upload 2. That may also be unavailable at this point. So do you guys think they're going to get anywhere?
Well, all I know is that the you know, what is the term? Lobbying from Hollywood has got to stop somehow. Like, we're getting to an impasse at some point. I don't know if it's now.
The problem is the people who have to vote into law are the people who are being paid not to.
Right.
So corruption is really hard to beat.
Yep.
I think at this point, unless we get a paradigm shift, it's just going to be whoever has the most money, which I'm kind of staring at Hollywood right now.
It's going to be Hollywood. And at the same time, though, I mean, Hollywood, Mega Upload was not Hollywood's enemy in this sort of thing. Hollywood's enemy is Pirate Bay. And no matter how many times you try to knock out Pirate Bay, they're going to keep living. There's almost no way you can get rid of them. So
I think the approach is music. Just give them just what Amazon and Spotify and all these places that give you the content. They need to like make it easy to get, make it a reasonable price, and people won't steal from you.
Not because you have to pay $25 for a movie.
I think you mentioned a paradigm shift. I think the internet was the paradigm shift, and the problem is that it's the worst thing that ever happened to Hollywood. And they just hate every day that goes by that they're not in charge of the way media works anymore because of the damn internet, you know?
Yeah, the horse whip people who you didn't want to go to a business when the automobile came about.
Like paradigm shift in the way that politics work. Right now, it's whoever has the money runs the government because the campaigning.
Cool heads do prevail in every while. I mean, CISPA was just, you know, defeated, which is, you know, in the wake of SOPA was the next step, you know. Yeah. So it seems like there is a certain amount of, like, sanity there.
And the thing about SOPA and CISPA, both of them were both started and defeated entirely bipartisanly. I mean, there wasn't any of the traditional Republican-Democrat politics going on there. So
I think that at the end of the day, what's going to have to happen to improve things is, you know, a younger generation of legislators are going to have to get up there. You know, the old people die out, the younger people take their place, and that's when the understanding of the way things really work will start to actually make the changes.
It's not going to be much longer. They are starting, and I'm seeing it on both sides of the aisle. The younger ones are starting to come up, especially when it comes to information technology and copyright law. They know what's going on. They know what the internet is. And they've got a better idea as to – it's not a series of tubes anymore. Like, they know what's going on.
and that guy died, which is all the more poignant, you know.
Speaking of things that suck.
There.
Wow. My brilliant mind.
So LucasArts folded.
And people were kind of sad, and then they thought about it for 5 minutes and stopped being sad.
Yeah.
Well, my thing is, like, LucasArts had lost their mojo a long time.
And that's why they stopped.
Probably about
the
mid-90s.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with LucasArts. Their last bona fide AAA title was Battlefront 2, which was what, 2005? Yeah, it had Revenge of the Sith assets. So 2005, 2006. Since then, they have released three titles. The Force Unleashed, which was okay at best, definitely flawed, but it was something they could build on. Force Unleashed 2, which was The ending was better than Force Unleashed 1, and that's the only good thing you can say about it, because the story is terrible.
Force Unleashed 2, with all that bullshit to like make the game take longer, just annoying.
And by longer, my sum total playing through it was 4.5 hours.
That was mine too, yeah.
It's like, that was BS.
It should be like fucking crime that they decided to charge full price for that game.
Exactly. And speaking of, you know, fucking crime for charging full price, Star Wars Connect, which I have played, and yes, it's as bad as everyone says.
Oh my gosh.
I
wouldn't even, you could not make me sit down and even try that. Well, I guess stand up.
I did it. I was drunk at a Christmas party. My friend brought it over. And
I like the best.
And me, since I'm friends with a bunch of DJs and I do some DJ work myself, when we saw that you could have Darth Vader and the Emperor dance the ghosts and stuff, we kind of did it. It was one of those, this has to happen at least once for all of us.
If for nothing else, Star Wars Connect is good for gratuitous silliness.
Did you then get sober later on and just, like, look inwards and just realize how horrible life is? And
No, because No, because then they did one of the Princess Leia levels and realized that Leia just takes off her neck chain holding her to Jabba, implying that she was there entirely consensually, which added 30,000 layers of squick to everything Star Wars.
Oh, my God.
Back to the point here... Star Wars hasn't had a solid game. You had the Battlefront 3 debacle. You had the Star Wars 1313 debacle. When LucasArts lost a lot of their people, they lost the Adventure Games team in 2001, and that was the people who knew how to make good story in-house. They went to form Telltale Games and Double Fine.
Right.
And then they started losing all their production team. As it went on, they lost Hayden Blackman, who was their lead writer for Force Unleashed, which, you know, as mediocre of a game as that was, its storyline was actually really good. Like, for a Star Wars story, it was pretty solid. And then he was gone by Force Unleashed 2 because of how terrible that was. LucasArts didn't die just recently when it folded. LucasArts died about 5 years ago, and nobody's crying about it.
That reminds me of that story about Adventure Games, saying, you know, people say Adventure Games, you know... died. He's like, I would submit that Adventures Games committed suicide.
They did.
This sounds like the same kind of thing.
And they came back to life because look at how good The Walking Dead did. I mean, Telltale is on top of their game and they own the market.
I still haven't played that.
Yeah, me neither.
I keep looking at
it. I gotta get to it eventually. If you ask me though, and I really want to make this point, if you ask me though, there's one real big tragedy in all this though, which is Monkey Island, and I'll explain why. The fact that Disney bought the rights to all of LucasArts, you know, they own LucasArts, they incorporated LucasArts, and they're giving them to EA, who don't give a fuck about, you know, like, the Adventure stuff. The big problem this creates is that what is Disney going to do with, like, the Monkey Islands rights? Nothing.
Because
they have Pirates of the Caribbean. Why would
that
they ever make a Monkey Islands game?
You're actually wrong, because Disney does not have the Monkey Island rights. The
really?
Monkey Island rights reverted to Tim Schafer. Remember who he took them to? Telltale Games, Tales of Monkey Island.
Yeah. Wait, but last I read, Disney definitely, like, Ron Gilbert wrote a whole blog post about how Disney now owns the rights. Like...
Really?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wish they would...
Just let Telltale do Monkey Island?
Investigation time!
Well, see, Telltale bought a temporary license to Monkey
Island. Oh.
Yeah, but it was always LucasArts that was like had the rights to it.
Oh,
and so
EA,
now those
just
reverted.
Give it to them, Jesus Christ.
Yeah,
that being said,
I have
read something where Tim Schafer is actively lobbying to get back Brutal Legend and a couple of the other licenses, mostly as part of the THQ fallout, which they were holding. But basically, Telltale and Double Fine are getting their licenses back, and seeing as how nobody else has any interest in them, they're not fetching a high price, so it's
good.
Decently likely that Monkey Island will belong in the right hands.
Well, that's hopefully good. It'll go.
Because the thing is, I don't know if this might even be worth its whole new point. I don't know if anybody else noticed this, but Ron Gilbert did a whole post about he's like currently he's working on it. He's trying to negotiate the rights back because he really wants to maybe develop another Monkey Island game that is more of a throwback to the original series, which I would love to see, but he wants to do it completely independently with like without a big team to make it feel more like the original series, which
see my problem is that, you know, LucasArts deserves to be shuttered just for the monkey combat.
Oh,
LucasArts deserves to be shuttered for what they did to Sam and Max Freelance Police. I wanted that game so bad.
Did any of that get incorporated into the Telltale series, by the way? Any of those ideas? Because I know the book is pretty similar, but...
I didn't play it. It's the Telltale tool, so it's like engine-wise, it's still that, although it's a very flexible tool. But I think it's more just the storyline of 4 happened, and they retconned a few things with a couple of jokes and moved on.
I played through the whole Tales of Monkey Island. They did some pretty interesting things. They had more of a callback to the insult combat, the insult sword fighting from the previous games. And that was fun.
I liked the insult sword fighting. That was good.
Tales of Monkey Island was very good. It wasn't like as good as like 2 or 3, but it was definitely like I've enjoyed playing it, you know what I mean?
The last chapter was really different than the previous chapters.
Oh yeah. Which I loved it. It felt
wandering around
like
the
climax.
You're wandering
so we're
around
off the
hell
point
or
here.
Underworld or something. I don't
know. EA.
EA has the Star Wars licenses. That's
which is the reason we're talking about Monkey Island is because
on the plus side, now a triple A very steady hit maker is making Star Wars games. That's great. On the downside, it's EA.
Right.
And I was telling the guys this joke before the recording, but they haven't already announced that BioWare, Visceral, and DICE will all be working on various Star Wars projects. What we want is BioWare's writers, DICE's gunplay, and Visceral's environment design.
Right.
What we're afraid we're going to get is BioWare's environments, DICE's writers, and Visceral's gunplay.
Well, BioWare has decent environments in Mass Effect 3 had some very impressive levels.
Dragon Age 2.
Yeah.
I haven't played that
one. You don't want to play that one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, Anthony and I play Battlefield 3. They have pretty good environments there.
True.
They do.
BioWare environments are definitely not bad by default, though. I mean...
And we're not saying any of these are terrible, but...
blew me away, environment-wise.
But it's more a situation where you have certain studios with certain strengths. EA needs to properly leverage those strengths to its different properties. Like, they need to tell KOTOR... They need to tell BioWare, get off your ass and just make KOTOR 3 using a modern engine, throw out any ridiculous gunplay elements that you want to do with Mass Effect, and actually make it a legit RPG again.
And I don't want any MMOs.
No
MMOs. I don't want any turn-based combat. I want it all just like old-school KOTOR.
DICE and Visceral are simple. For DICE, you give them Battlefront 3. Finally do it right, and be done with it. And then for Visceral,
awesome.
You give them 13-13.
I would be all
guys,
over that.
You give Visceral 13-13, third-person shooter starring bounty hunters and or Boba Fett, depending on which version of the game you are looking at. And basically let them go through the underworld. You get the nasty environments. You get the really clean environments. And let them do what they do very well, which is third-person shooters. Take Dead Space, take out the scary, and add in the badass. That's what you need.
Battlefront 3 is just a fucking depressing nightmare. Because I feel like every month, another, 2 minutes or so of, leaked footage from development come out on the internet, and they just all look so good. Like, it's just a fucking shame.
All kinds of stuff like that surfaces. I mean, you know, there was something, I guess they were actually making an actual Arkham Asylum-like Batman Gotham by Gaslight game, which just shocks me, because I remember enjoying that comic book back in the 90s, and the fact that it reverberated so much that somebody just thought they could actually sell a whole game behind it is just amazing to me.
All right, would you play an old Batman-style game in that engine, but like Adam West-era Batman?
That would be the greatest thing on the planet.
Oh my God.
See, like, parody stuff has a place, but it's got to be well done, and like my favorite parody game was... No One Lives Forever, which was essentially...
The soccer mom who's a spy or something.
Well, it was... No, she wasn't a soccer mom. But it was... She was a thief that became an assassin. And the thing about the game was that, you know, the action was hardcore, but the environments and the characters were humorous. You know, the vaunted conversation about the doctors talking about the other doctor they wish had died in the explosion, and... them joking about, like, you know, I hope you fry like a chicken or an egg, whichever comes first, you know, just that kind
of
stuff was just awesome.
The vibe I got from a game like Beyond Good and Evil.
It's, I would say similar, but not as cartoony. I mean, the world is still somewhat believable, and people's heads do splatter in bloods when you nail a headshot. And the game had a big thing about, like, if you get a headshot but they're looking at you, they make a noise when they fall down, where if you get a headshot and they didn't see you, they go down quietly. Hmm. Like, that kind of mechanic makes perfect sense. And
right.
things like that have really been fleshed out in later games, you know. So, location-based damage, that was a big deal to me. It may not be the first game that did it, it was the first game I played that did it. So, talking about stuff that's been done.
That's your transition? Boy. Really?
Yep. And stuff that people think is done. The Tech Pundits, the podcast that I tend to listen to, talk about, quote-unquote, living in the cloud.
Oh, God.
That is to say that we don't keep any local data on our computers or on our phones. We just keep it all in the cloud and screw local storage. So my question to you, gentlemen, is that do you do this? Why or why not? Anthony.
Oh, no. I am definitely a classic computing person, so I have tons of stuff locally. I do use the cloud to store some stuff, but it's mainly just to be able to go from point A to point B and grab it afterwards.
You have a Windows Phone. Do you use, what is it called? SkyDrive? SkyDrive, yes.
I use SkyDrive and Dropbox, depending on the situation.
Okay.
Yeah, for me, it's, yeah, Google. I only started using Google Drive, but that and Dropbox, yeah, very useful. But I got to, like, it's, I know what you're talking about, and it really worries me. Like, recently we had that Microsoft guy who did that whole tweet about how, you know, he doesn't understand the whole thing about why always online, and then he got, like, fucking, resigned or something.
Because the world is not there yet. I mean,
no.
And so many things aren't there. Like you can just watch shows on Netflix. No, you can't. It's not all there.
Yeah.
Or you can just watch on Amazon if you're a Prime member. No, you can't. It's not all there.
No, I wonder. And not everybody uses it. Not everybody has the money for it. Not everybody can afford a really fast internet connection. Not everybody gets fast internet connections out where they live. I definitely feel that developers sometimes, or the people who are in these, like, they live in a bubble where they think that the world is more adjusted to the internet than it is.
Yes, you develop from San Francisco or L.A. where there's just so much dense population, and you can walk from one Wi-Fi signal to another and forget about having cell phone coverage.
Mm-hmm. The poor people in Podunk, Ohio.
Yeah, but, like, you know, the U.S. is very sparsely populated in the realms east of that area, and it's kind of dense over here, but even here in my state, Michigan, I mean, if you were to take the mitten theory and you stick towards the knuckle of the thumb and maybe the first half of the thumb, that's where the density is. Moving up towards the fingers, there's almost nothing.
Yeah.
It is very sparse.
It's the same here in Minnesota. Outside the 20-25 square miles that is the Twin Cities, there's nothing out there.
Yeah, Vegas is like that near the Strip. Same difference.
Do I need to say anything about Montana?
Nope.
Nope.
Just like I likely don't need to say anything about Oklahoma. Same kind of deal.
So, Dalkin, are you living in the cloud?
Well, considering how high in the mountains he is. Tip your waiters and try the veal.
Yes and no. As far as the definition of, like, if I'm keeping all my data remote, no. Most of what I use cloud storage for is so that I can have stuff as a backup. So, and then, like Anthony said, if I'm working from multiple locations, then it makes transfer a lot easier. And primarily for that, I use Dropbox. But I keep a lot of data locally. And pretty much I just use Dropbox to move stuff from machine to machine or quick transfer to other people.
What about you, Jeff?
I use Dropbox quite a bit. Mostly, again, like Dalkin, to transfer stuff between computers, because I have my little netbook that I sometimes take with me to work, and I'll work on, like, a book or writing or stories and stuff there, and it's just easy to just kind of dump it into the Dropbox folder and know that it's going to be backed up and I can access it home or on my phone, or if I'm talking to somebody on Skype or chatting with them on my phone, I can immediately, you know, link and reference whatever's in my Dropbox folder. So yeah, I do use it a fair bit, but most of my stuff is backed up to hard drives and backup hard drives. All I can say is if we haven't learned anything from Live Free or Die Hard, that keeping stuff in digital formats all over the place, you know, on the internet can be a dangerous thing. If,
people,
you know.
What about you?
Did people actually watch Die Hard 3? Sorry, 4.
Yeah, it was Die Hard 4.
Sorry, I'm joking.
People didn't watch
Die Hard 17!
And I feel bad for you if you've watched 5, because I did, and I feel horrible.
I'm sorry.
Eric, are you on the cloud?
Kind of, but not really. The kind of is because I do use Google Music, because my main music device...
You disgust me.
Shut up. My main music device is my Galaxy Nexus. And just being able to access my library instantly without having to worry about syncing, without any of that. Like I said, I live in the Twin Cities. I have a lot of 4G access out here, so... being able to download things isn't so much an issue, and when I'm at work, when I'm at home, it is more of an issue because I don't have 4G at home. But that's pretty much the only thing that I use cloud. I have a Dropbox, and I use it for some small document sharing with a different company that I work with from time to time. But otherwise, for a personal use, it's video game mods, it's video clips from my VJ work, which we're talking about, 500, 600, 700 meg at the least, and up to 4, 5, 6, 7 gigs at the biggest. Cloud and internet speeds, when we're talking multiple gigabytes, they don't work that way. I can't...
Hell, even 1 gigabyte.
Yeah. And
because of the asynchronous connections that we, end users tend to get, upload speeds are just not sufficient to move
exactly
multiple gigabyte files. Yeah. Just isn't.
I'm in a position where I can far faster... transfer files between computers, say at my apartment and my friend who's the DJ that I work with, his apartment, and getting video files and audio files synchronized by just bringing my thumb drive or my external hard drive, depending on what's going on.
The sneaker net has also been the fastest.
Mm-hmm. So
I did forget to mention I also use Google Drive quite frequently, mostly for the other group projects I'm on that are not podcasts, but actual like radio plays,
yeah,
stuff like that. So
a lot of small groups collaborate with Google stuff.
I'm doing the same thing with Dropbox right now.
But Google Drive is actually, according to some articles I've read, has been quite a bit behind like what SkyDrive is at. And I don't feel like SkyDrive is at the point where it's ready for me. So
no.
Here... I use the cloud to an extent. I refuse to get on board with the whole cloud music thing. I'm very picky about my music, and it's stored locally, made into meticulous folders with meticulous playlists, which are synced to my phone, so everything is where I want it to be, so I can find it when I want it in the future. But outside of that, I like that my bookmarks in Chrome sync to Chrome on my phone. I like that my contacts in Gmail sync to my phone, as does... I use Picasa to organize my pictures on the web. It just sees the folders on my computer, sees what's changed, uploads what's changed to the web. I tell my phone to maintain local copies of the pictures, and then I never, like when I sign into my Android phone, it gets pictures, email, bookmarks, applications, all without me having to do anything.
Mm-hmm.
All I have to do is sync the media to it, the music and the videos. Mm-hmm. The things that would be meatier anyway would take longer to get to it anyhow. But I kind of like live in the like my podcast app. I use that to get my podcasts. I don't sync podcasts from the computer. I let the phone do it itself. So in some ways, I'm kind of getting on board with the cloud. But in other ways, I'm like, no, I'm never jumping in with both feet. I mean, my computer has currently 4 terabytes of storage, and I'm talking about upgrading to 2 4-terabyte hard drives for a total of 8 terabytes of storage. I mean,
that's
I'm not
far outside any form of cloud usability.
Yeah, there's just no way you could use the cloud for that. And maybe at some point the switch will be flipped and all the media you could ever want would be streaming on the web. But then think about that. What if everybody who watches TV right now suddenly switched to Netflix? The web could not handle it.
No, and
already even 60%
if they had
of the modern web is already Netflix. Like,
but even
yeah.
even if they had everything, if everything you'd want on there, and that's not going to happen for a very, very long time.
Yeah.
But even if they did, the web as we know it can't handle it.
No, technically we've seen this problem before. I mean, everyone talks about this whole cloud computing thing being new, but back in the old days, 70s, early 80s, they used to use mainframe computing, which is very similar.
Mm-hmm. To the cloud approach for doing that.
Right,
yeah.
And we
I remember the big push started... Big push started when I was in college, when they were Citrix thin clients.
Yeah.
Yep.
And whenever I've talked to people who use Citrix thin clients, let's say that 10 times fast, it's never been as good an experience as having dedicated hardware on your desk.
Never will be.
But dedicated hardware on your desk has an expense associated with it and an upkeep associated with it, whereas the thin client just connects you to a virtualization on the server, which they can easily replace, you know, with a click of a button. So you see the advantages, but there's pros and cons both ways.
But then you talk about they're going to want to optimize the usage, and then you start debating, well, is it more efficient for me to increase my server size or just to charge more so fewer people use it? The same thing that happened with mainframes. And we're just going to cycle through this all over again.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, hardware is getting more efficient. You know, I mean, remember in the early 2000s when Intel couldn't get a 1 gigahertz processor stable with fan cooling? And now I've got a dual core 1.5 gigahertz processor in my phone. They have quad core 1.7 gigahertz in your phone, passively cooled.
Yep.
Now I will fully accept that these are not the same level of power as, say, an x86 desktop processor, but the point still stands.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
You know, they're able to do more now than they could before, you know, with less hardware.
And
so
that'll continue on. As long as they can keep shrinking the components, they'll be able to keep doing more with less power.
I mean, that's why dual core, quad core processing has become a thing, is because they simply can't push the frequency so much higher. I mean, they didn't go to parallelism because they wanted to. They did it because they had to.
No one wants to do parallelism if they can help it. It's way too difficult to make everything work right.
Yeah, so.
Yeah.
So I think that about ends the podcast.
Alrighty then, yeah. Sounds like it's been a pleasure talking with you gentlemen once again.
I can't say the same.
Well, you can go fuck yourself.
Gladly.
With us has been Eric, who's an asshole.
I had gin, but I'm still better than you.
Which is up for discussion. David.
Farewell.
Anthony.
Signing off.
Jeffrey, who is gone?
Yes, yes he is.
Okay. So, whatever. And John.
I think I might be a little thirsty now.
And me, Patrick, who is also maybe a little thirsty for something very strong. See you all whenever.
Do I need to refill my gin?
Yes.
Okay.
Do you want me to do the transitions? You seem to be kind of rough.
What? Those were good transitions.
Yeah, but you're umming and ahhing through them. It's kind of hurting my feelings.
Umming and ahhing through it.
Well, I was talking about the...
That's how I talk.
Talk about the OSs and the transitions and the changing and the thing.
I know.
Do you want me to handle
away from him?
Can we mute him?
Jonathan, what do you think?
Hello, everyone.
Want to try that again?
I was not ready. I thought you were... Last time you were with somebody else.
Well, I'm going in the order that they appear in my screen right now. I think... Sorry, cut that. I forgot what I was going to say.
This will get fixed in post, as it never does.
So not
and
only
it's
going
to go in bloopers.
Yeah, that too.
Speaking of firing... Actually, wait a minute. That was...
Oh,
I get
well,
to stay up when I want, and then...
You're part of me.
Congratulations.
Count.
Part of me goes, ha 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 ha.
I understand that.
I will talk to you all later. It's been a great show.
Many hearts to you.
I love you too, Dalkin.
that love needs more lube.
Ooh.
So,
implications.
Yeah.
We have them.